From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made last Wednesday, September 20th, when Hurricane Maria made landfall in Puerto Rico. The island was still recovering from an indirect hit 2 weeks earlier from Hurricane Irma, which knocked out power to tens of thousands of people. But Maria was a direct, sustained hit. At the latest count, 16 people have died. Power was lost on the entire island, impacting 3.4 million people. Mayors say that food is running out, and so is water. So for the last week, we've heard from Puerto Ricans living in Rochester who are desperate to make contact with friends and family there. The humanitarian crisis will take months to fully address, and right now, many more lives are at stake. President Trump plans to visit Puerto Rico next Tuesday, and yesterday he said that the federal response has been excellent. But on the island, the feeling is one of desperation and fear. The New York Times editorial board implored readers to remember that Puerto Ricans are Americans, too. They wrote, quote, "All Americans should rally forcefully behind their fellow citizens left suffering on the island as it labors to recover. It is up to mainland leaders not to stint on aid for Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, however lacking they may be in political clout in Washington," end quote. Western New York has a vibrant Puerto Rican community, and we wanted to hear from them this hour and to consider ways we can all help. In studio with me today, my guests are Patricia Cruz Irving, Director of Development and Communications for Ibero-American Action League. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Isabel Cordova is an associate professor in the Department of History and Political Science and a historian at Nazareth College. Welcome.
Thanks. Pleased to be here.
And Maria Delgado is a nurse, and her husband is currently volunteering with FEMA in Puerto Rico. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. And listeners, I would like to invite you to join this conversation. If you have friends or family in Puerto Rico that you are hearing from and you want to share their stories, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. So I'd like to start by just going around the table and asking each of our guests to describe their experience reaching out to friends and family. As I mentioned, 3.4 million people, the entire island without power. I imagine it's been very difficult to try to hear from your family. Maria, I'll start with you. How has your experience been?
Well, my experience has been a little bit nerve-wracking. From the very beginning, when I heard about the news, I've just been not able to sleep. I've been stressed. I do take care of my elderly parents. My husband, as you noted, he is with FEMA, and he was deployed to Hurricane Harvey to Texas for 2 weeks. He was home for a day and a half, and then he was deployed to Florida for 2 weeks. And then he now has this assignment, so he is in Puerto Rico right now. So on top of, and I have, just yesterday, I did receive a message from him. So I've had a lot of stress, but my stress is nothing compared to the stress that everyone in the island is having at this minute right now. I am completely worried. I know that Puerto Rico is devastated from the little bits that I speak with my husband, from the little bits of text that I do get from him. I was able to connect with some family members. And the great thing, I have to give a shout out to Facebook. I know a lot of people do not like Facebook, but I, for one, you know, all that I could contribute right now is looking at my Facebook at 6 a.m. between 6 and 7. And then before I go to bed, I just, you know, look through Facebook. And this is how I'm contributing. I look to see who I can connect. I did not hear from my brother, Arthur, in Puerto Rico. And I put my Facebook public. And within like 5 minutes, I got a response. I know your brother. He is okay. I'm his cousin on his mother's side from a cousin in, you know, he told me the town. And I was like, wow, this is just wonderful. And I was overjoyed. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do this and start connecting everyone else. So I just scroll when I see a story of someone is missing or, you know, they haven't heard from someone or they need a ride to the hospital or something. I just put it out there. And that's how my connection is right now.
I've found that experience happening with some friends and family as well. My cousin has family in Puerto Rico, and he's doing the same thing you are. He's reaching out, trying to make connections. So Facebook, very valuable at this time. Isabel, what's your experience been?
I think I've been pretty lucky. I've sort of felt like I've been almost in the hurricane from the beginning because I have a WhatsApp sort of chat group with most of my cousins in Puerto Rico. It's a cousins group, and it's very active. And for the entire time when the rain started and the wind started, they were all on and communicating, and there was a lot of movement. So pretty much through the evening and into the night, when the hurricane arrived, I was kind of listening to their voices and sharing the tensions. They were getting very nervous and talking about how the noise was increasing and how a window just flew and I can't stop the water. And so in one way, it was very nice. In another way, it was very disturbing. And then the silence that followed was really disturbing. And then there's a few of us in the, continental U.S., spread through Texas, California, New Jersey, and Rochester, and my sister, for example, in North Carolina. And we pretty much stayed abreast of things and sent a lot of information out to them. And then because most of my family is from the San Juan metro area, a lot of the power, a lot of the ability to get like phone signal, or which is very spotty still, but was much better in San Juan. I have a brother in Vieques, one of the islands off of Puerto Rico, and it took us almost the entire week before we knew from him. That was really difficult. We sort of assumed he would be okay, but not hearing and not knowing, and then not even getting to the point that Maria is describing of being able to see somebody on the safe list that could say, but we were definitely using all of our Facebook, WhatsApp, all of the kinds of social media, which were really active and really helpful to try to locate people. So after everything had kind of passed, little by little over a course of several days, we sort of started finding out at least one person that knew of somebody, and then news would spread. And we've accounted for everybody in my immediate family, finally. It did take quite a while. But again, I do think we're sort of in a privileged group of people because of access in and out of San Juan and also the United States. So,
the silence just has to be terrifying.
It's unnerving, definitely.
I think, this is Maria speaking now, I think the worst part is the silence of just not knowing. Mm-hmm. And I still haven't heard from a few family members and friends. But I have faith that they are as fine as they can be. Right. And I know that the people in general of Puerto Rico are resilient. And I know that we will overcome this. But it's going to take years before we can have Puerto Rico the way that it was before. Mm-hmm.
Patricia, how long did it take you to hear from friends and family?
So in my case, my dad is from Puerto Rico, from the southwest, a small town called Lajas, which has a population of 25,000. And it was actually just yesterday that we found out that our family is all okay. And my aunt was able to get a hold of them. And I asked her, how about their houses? Is everything okay? And fortunately for them, that the only thing that they're seeing actually is a lot of trees that have fallen and a lot of water. But because they are about like 2.5 to 3 hours away from San Juan, they haven't experienced that kind of devastation. I will say, though, that many years ago, I don't remember which hurricane it was, but that hurricane actually destroyed the home where my dad grew up in. Mm. And talking about, for example, it's nerve-wracking not to hear. I just took a phone call from somebody who lives in SOTUS this morning because someone I know who knows both of us had asked me, can she reach out to you because she's looking to get more information. She doesn't know anything. She's really worried. And so she has no support group really in SOTUS. And I said, sure, have her give me a call. And so she called me this morning and she said, they're just so worried because they haven't heard from their dad. And so when I was talking to the media earlier today, I was like, for her family, it's double isolation because one, they haven't heard anything about their family. And number two, she lives in SOTUS and SOTUS doesn't have the kind of Latino population that we do here in Rochester, where you can go somewhere in the city of Rochester and walk down the street to a restaurant or to the library and talk to people. And that at least will help make you feel better because that other people are going through the same thing. So I was giving her advice on what she could do. I suggested that she create a Facebook page so that she could, put the word out there and ask, has anybody heard from my father in this town? And I actually recommended that she speak to one of the media outlets today to share her story, because I said, when you talk to the media, that really helps get the word out. And that prompts people to come forward and say, hey, you know what? I know somebody from that town. I can help you find out if your dad's okay.
Mm-hmm. Do any of you feel isolated? You just mentioned the word isolated, Patricia, and I'm sure there's a lot of that going on there as people feel like the federal government isn't doing enough. We can talk about that in a moment. But just being here in the city of Rochester, where there is a big Latino population, but in somewhere like SOTUS, do you find that there are more people who feel isolated? Have you talked to anyone about that in particular?
I personally do not feel isolated because I'm surrounded by, you know, the Latino population here in Rochester, which is fantastic. And we are doing a lot of things in Rochester to help out with this situation. There are times where I feel like just alone, because I know my hands are full right now with everything that's going on that I'm doing, that I don't know how much more I can help. Another way that I feel isolated also is I went and took my mom to an appointment, a doctor's appointment last Friday, and it was the day we were all supposed to wear red. So, you know, I had my red on, and I'm in the waiting room. And there was two ladies that were sitting across from me, and the news came on about Puerto Rico. They were talking about the hurricane and about Mexico, the earthquake. And one of the ladies says to the other lady, oh, I'm so sick and tired of hearing about this news. And I said to myself, wow, I'm going to go over there and say something. Then I'm looking at my mom, and I'm like, okay, just be calm, Maria. You know, don't say anything. At the same time, an African-American woman came in, and she was wearing red also. So she looked at me. I looked at her. She came over, gave me a hug, and said, you know what? It's going to be okay. And it was like, wow. It made my hair stand up, and it was like, you know, this is just fantastic how, you know, we're all bonding together and getting through this for those few people who are saying negative things about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tricia, outside of your friend in SOTUS, have you been hearing from other people who either have been grasping onto the community, the Latino community, for support, or other people who feel like they're a bit cut off and they need some support?
Well, certainly being here in the city of Rochester, the outpouring of support has just been tremendous. And so again, you know, here in the city of Rochester, Monroe County, it's very easy to just call somebody or to reach out to somebody to talk to them, to, you know, find out if they've heard from anybody, you know, how they're coping. But again, you know, I'm originally from Avon, so I know what it's like when you live in one of those towns and you don't have a large Hispanic population. You can feel isolated because you don't have other people to talk to. So that's why, you know, if people are living in the outskirts and they just want somebody to talk to, we're more than happy to talk to them at iBureau, because we want to help them, you know, at least have somebody to talk to, because that's so important. And, you know, for as much as we talk about the people here, we have to go back. We have to take a step back and really think about what are the people feeling in Puerto Rico? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I've always said to people over the years is that you haven't seen poor until you go somewhere else. Like, the poor here in the U.S. is not poor. And I don't say that to be, you know, critical. It's just an observation. It's just a fact. And so, you know, not that everybody in Puerto Rico is poor. I'm not saying that. Although more than half what I read this morning was that they live under the poverty line.
Yeah, I think it's 46%.
Yeah. And so that's astounding. And so, you know, one of the things that I try to do is I try to take a step back and imagine what it must be like to be there right now, to have no water, to have no electricity, to figure out, you know, where's your next meal going to come from? Or if you have a baby, how are you going to take care of that baby? You know, that baby has to come first. I'm a new mom. So, you know, you think about that. You know, one of the items that's being accepted is diapers and wipes to send over there. And of course, because you go through so many, you know, with a baby or infants. And so I think it's important that people really take a step back to think about what it must be like for people living over there. How would we feel if we were in that situation where we didn't have any water, any electricity? And something horrible that I just read this morning is that two people in the intensive care unit at the hospital died because they ran out of diesel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just heartbreaking to hear that, to hear those kinds of stories.
Yes, the San Juan Mayor Carmen Cruz said there's a growing need for help for desperate people in hospitals. He said, quote, we're finding dialysis patients that have not been able to contact their providers. We're having to transport them in near-death conditions. We're finding people whose oxygen tanks are running out because our small generators don't have any diesel. So that's a growing problem. How can people contact iBureau if they are feeling isolated and want to be part of the community?
So they can give us a call.
What's the number?
585-256-8900. And we have a great staff, and, you know, we're all bilingual when we answer the phones, most of us anyway. And so they can give us a call again, 585-256-8900. They can also email us at information@iaal.org. Again, that's information@iaal.org. You know, so as a nonprofit, we also have our hands full, but we want to be there for everybody. So again, if they want to give us a call or email us, we're really good about getting back to people. I know I am, because I just know that when you don't hear from people, you're wondering and wondering. So we work really hard to get back to people right away and to talk to them and walk them through things, give them advice, suggestions. Like even when we just spoke to that woman this morning and I recommended that she create a Facebook page. When we got off the phone, before we got off the phone, she was just so grateful. And it sounded like she was, you know, her spirits had been lifted. Mm-hmm. I mean, just little things like that go such a long ways.
Absolutely. And knowing this hurricane was coming, did you have a plan, any of you, with your families about how you might get in touch with each other if power went out or if there was a chain of command, really, to make sure everyone was okay? Was that something that you talked about before the storm hit, Isabel?
I mean, I suppose because even the immediate family is pretty large, it's pretty extensive, the hope was that somebody would have some sort of signal, but I think everybody knew that it might be a while. Mm-hmm. And even people that lived very close to one another, even in the San Juan area, couldn't get to, you know, a neighborhood right next door to see if an aunt or uncle were okay, etc. I think people in Puerto Rico, I was in Puerto Rico, for example, in the late 90s and early until 2000, and lived through George's, for example, which was really devastating. We were without water and power for many, many weeks. You just know that you have to just be patient and know that you're not going to hear from people for a while, and you can't really predict. Sometimes you wait around for a hurricane and think it's going to be terrible and prepare for the worst and nothing happens. Like, you know, we were very lucky with Irma, for example. And other times, you know, getting out of your house is going to take a few days. You know, sometimes you run out of not just diesel for generators and keeping people alive, which is super important, but nobody considers, for example, you run out of oil for your chainsaw to just cut down the tree that's blocking the entrance to your home. So, I mean, I think it was just, we didn't have like a set plan because we didn't know, oh, well, somebody has a satellite phone or that we didn't have anything like that. We knew it might be a while, but we just sort of hoped that eventually somebody would pop up and be able to speak for the rest of the family and friends. And really, speaking a little bit to the previous question, you know, network systems have really, I've received emails and phone calls and texts and all kinds of things from people around the world that I know asking about, do you know, I have a friend that has somebody in on the island, or just asking me about my family. It's almost been difficult to keep up with all the great people reaching out and looking to help somebody that they know. And that's, I think what has been described already has worked really well. It might take a few days, but you know that a neighbor of a neighbor and a friend of a friend might know somebody that saw somebody. And there's been a lot of contact just that way. But there was no real plan. It was, I guess, but it somehow worked out.
What are the most immediate needs that you're hearing about? Of course, the entire island without power, there are food shortages, water shortages. 80% of the crop value in Puerto Rico was affected. It's one of the costliest storms to hit the island's agriculture industry, Hurricane Maria. And just looking at some of the data from previous hurricanes, so with Hurricane Maria, the island suffered a loss of $780 million in agriculture yields, $780 million. And Hurricane George's in 1998 wiped out 65% of crops. Hurricane Irma, which only grazed the island, took out $45 million in crops. So this storm, much more devastating. What are you hearing from friends and family about their most immediate needs? Maria?
The most immediate need, well, I haven't been able to have too much contact, so I want to get that clear. I have a cousin there in Yabucoa, and Yabucoa was where it got hit very hard in Yabucoa. He has cancer. He goes in for cancer treatments every 21 days for chemo, and he has a tracheostomy. So we're concerned about the water for cleaning his tracheostomy. We're concerned about, I mean, it's just not only him. There are other people who have illnesses there that need to get to, you know, to have their medical needs met. So the greatest concern for them is water right now. There's people that are still walking around in puddles of water that's backed up with sewage, if you can even imagine that. So that's the biggest thing, water and food. The one message that I do also have WhatsApp also, but it didn't work. And I finally was able to receive, I think it was one little message or two messages that I received on the WhatsApp. And the message said, it's getting really difficult here now. And that was it. Mm-hmm. So you receive just one little message like that and your heart goes, oh my God, what, you know, what can I do? You know, it's just mind-boggling, this whole thing. I do want to say that with a friend of mine, Irene Sanchez, she created a group called Puertorriqueños Unidos en la Distancia on Facebook. And we have now a group of 30 participants that we're all getting together to try and figure out what we can do in the future. We're having a Zumbathon on October 1st, this Sunday, from 2 to 5 p.m. if anyone wants to go there. The admission will be $15 at the door, or you can bring in any goods. Anything that you bring will go 100%. We're sending it to Governor Cuomo in New York City. And if you bring any cash donations, the cash will go, or checks, it will go directly to United for Puerto Rico.
Have you been able to talk with your husband much? He's volunteering with FEMA. What has he been hearing?
I just heard from him yesterday. And it was just by text. And they actually flew him from Florida to Puerto Rico. When they got to Puerto Rico, it was about 3 a.m. And then about 6 a.m., he was flown over to St. Croix. And they evacuated a hospital there that had 70 critically ill patients back to the United States to Atlanta. And that's really all I have heard. When he did receive the list that I sent him, I sent him an email before he left, because as soon as everyone knew that he was going to Puerto Rico, everyone started sending me addresses of family members. So my phone was like, bing, 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 you know, with all these addresses. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get him that list. And he said, I will try my best, because there's little FEMA groups, you know, all over the place, and try to make the contact. So he should be in Puerto Rico right now as I speak. I don't know. But he says that it's, when he was getting the 70 people out of that hospital, it's just not him, the big group, there was 500 people also trying to get out. And it was at the airport, and it's hot, and it's muggy, and there's no food, and there's no water. So there was a big police presence there at the airport. So it can make things dangerous, a little bit dangerous, but everyone is frustrated.
Mm-hmm. So I might, there's a couple of things I can possibly add to what Maria has already said. I know that the needs are also about fuel. So we've talked about that, diesel for generators. But it's not just, a lot of the FEMA shipments have come in. Part of the problem is distribution. And I think that's where people on the island have run into real difficulties. And then there are a lot of, I don't know how to call them, storage unit or whatever, in the ports waiting basically to restock commerce, right? So just stores and grocery stores, and that's not getting out of the ports at all to be distributed. So one of the things that people are faced with is you need to move mostly to the metro area. So there's a big divide between sort of San Juan and the rest of the island, and you can really see the very massive discrepancies through social classes and even rural versus urban, right, which is a real problem. They use all of their gasoline to get to the urban areas to then wait in a line, and I'm not exaggerating, anywhere between 6 to 13 hours, and sometimes end up not even getting that 1 gallon of diesel or of gas that you needed. So most of the days for people now there's really few businesses running. The schools aren't up and running. The university isn't up and running. And there's no date to get it up and running. Small businesses aren't running. A couple of the shopping centers are up and running in San Juan, at least. But people just stand in lines. And, for example, to go in to buy formula for your baby or something like that, you might also wait for hours. One person gets let in at a time, or 10 people at a time in a store, just to get a couple basic supplies. And then the next day, same thing over again. And so I think, obviously, the patience is running thin. Safety is a huge issue that Maria mentioned. The shipments of gas or diesel or fuel that come in, roads are like shut down. You know, the FBI comes in patrolling some of these trucks. And so there is, in a lot of places, I think people have remarked how orderly things have been. And of course, there's exceptions to that that get very, very scary. So,
listeners, if you'd like to join this conversation and share any stories that you are hearing from friends or family members in Puerto Rico, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. We're going to take our short break, our only break of the hour. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about stories that we're hearing and also about how the federal government is responding to this humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. So stay with us. More Connections is next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about television, specifically about the show Will and Grace. The show was called groundbreaking in its time for the way that it treated LGBTQ characters on screen. So what can we expect from the new rendition of that? Our guests weigh in about how they think LGBTQ character portrayals have evolved over time. That's next on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson. As you can hear, we're having a lively and productive discussion today about the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. Hurricane Maria hit just 1 week ago, 3.4 million people without power. And during the break, Isabel, you were mentioning that, yes, this is a very dire situation, a lot of devastation, but there are some bright spots. So go ahead and tell us about what you were mentioning.
I think really just in the past couple of days, people are finally hearing. There are a lot of people that have not heard from loved ones, even, you know, inside or outside of the island. You know, there's people on, you know, in Puerto Rico that aren't hearing from loved ones, but also people the diaspora isn't hearing from everybody. But phones are beginning to work. A lot of the temporary satellite towers have been installed, and you can get signal through other networks. So some of that has been put into place. Some people are going canvassing house to house with satellite phones. So there's different methods of communication that have been kind of looking a little bit better more recently. There's a couple of hospitals that have managed through generators to maintain power. Of course, the danger is they have about a day or two more of fuel left. But places like Auxilio Mutuo, for example, in Rio Piedras, is a hospital that has been pretty much fully operational throughout. So they were lucky enough to be able to do that. But again, I do really think that I want to stress the difference between, you know, the capital, the urban, and then other areas. And I don't mean to claim that things are fine. Right. Some commerce is opening up. Like I said, I think really in the last day or two, a couple of the shopping centers have opened and things like that. So I do have a lot of family that has reported, and I've also read that about 40% of people are getting water. It's spotty. It comes and goes. Sometimes you get water for a couple hours and then you lose it again. But some of that's coming back. A couple of people have reported that close to some of the hospitals, they have started to get power. So there's a little bit of actual power, not just generators, but power coming on. I wouldn't count on it for too long. Again, it comes and it goes. But the roads have been cleared in a lot of places, so people are able to move around some. Again, I say this all, of course, within some very serious constraints, but
It must be incredibly difficult to have friends and family there and not be able to see anything or hear from them. My colleague in the newsroom, Juan Vasquez, let me know that if you go on NOAA's website, they do provide a satellite picture and you can zoom into certain parts of the island and see what's happening there. It's like a Google Street Image kind of picture. The website is storms.ngs.noaa.gov. So that's storms.ngs.noaa.gov. The entire island isn't available via satellite yet, but certain parts are. Isabella, I see you nodding. Have you used the site?
No, but I know a lot of sites like that have been reported and shared. I know my sister's really been on top of this all. She's sort of more techie than I am. And a cousin of mine also in Texas has suggested some of these sites, and apparently some people have used them. I don't know if always the information is super reliable, but all of that is important, you know, and I think is helpful.
Let's see. The main question that a lot of people are raising when it comes to the hurricane is if this had happened in Texas or in Florida, this kind of devastation, this destruction, how would the response be different? I'll go around the table and ask each of you what your thoughts are about the federal response. President Trump said yesterday that it's excellent. I heard on NPR this morning that supplies have reached San Juan, but they haven't reached certain populations yet, so that's a struggle. But Patricia, starting with you, how do you feel about the federal response?
Before I answer that question, first, it's important for me to mention, to really thank the Rochester community for it. You know, we are so grateful because we had a telethon on Monday with the American Red Cross, which raised more than $100,000. And every single day since last week, around the clock, we have people calling us, emailing us, texting us, texting me, texting the president and CEO, the chief operations officer, you know, about what they're working on, how they can help. So the gratitude demonstrated by the Rochester Monroe County community, and not just the Latino community, you know, everybody has to really be credited and thanked for coming forward and really helping and coming together. And, you know, people always talk about how altruistic Rochester is, and it's true. And, you know, we're really seeing that now with the amount of support that we're getting from everybody, from all walks of life, from people from different backgrounds. As far as the federal response, you know, I go based on what I read from different news outlets, and I read them all because I think it's important to get, you know, a different perspective and just to see what everybody's saying. And I think they're doing everything they can. You know, the difference is between Puerto Rico and then Texas or Florida is that when you're taking supplies to Puerto Rico, you can't drive there. You have to either fly them in or take them there by boat. And so this morning when I was reading on one of the news websites, the governor of Puerto Rico said, you know, people have to remember this, that we can't just drive supplies in. And so it seems to me that the federal government is doing the best that it can. I know that a lot of people may always be quick to say, oh, no, the government could be doing more. But, you know, for another example, for donations, we're being told here locally, we're being told to tell people to take them to the state police barracks on Scottsville Road. And then those donations will be driven to New York City, and JetBlue will fly them to Puerto Rico. JetBlue is doing that for free. So that's tremendous. So at least it's my opinion that enough is being done. Could more be done? I mean, to be honest, I don't work at the federal level to see that. I just know that here at the local level, there has been tremendous support where the fundraisers continue to happen. People continue to collect supplies at the schools, at the churches, restaurants, everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Isabel, what do you think about the federal response?
From what I understand, FEMA is still pulling from the same pot that sort of Congress approved this, you know, recently this month in response to Hurricane Harvey in Texas and Irma in Florida and also the Caribbean U.S. Virgin Islands. And so all of this is coming from that same $15 billion pot, and FEMA is still working within that money. So I think there are some issues, right? There has been a response from the federal government, but it's still part of that same response that started with Harvey, right? There's limitations that the federal government could be lifting and is not. For example, the shipping restrictions that I think are problematic and in an emergency could be lifted and have before. I'm not really sure why that's not being dealt with. There are people in our government pushing for that, but it's not happening. I think I saw in the Puerto Rican press, and I don't know if I don't have a way to cross-reference this, but the Puerto Rican press reported that the governor, José Yo, said that President Trump has said that there's most places receiving help from FEMA are supposed to be matching the funds locally, and so that's been kind of overridden. So they're not Puerto Rico is not required to respond. Puerto Rico, I want to say, is in a, you know, I think this hurricane is very different for a lot of reasons, and I don't know if I could take a couple minutes later to cover some of those. But I also want to mention that, you know, there's the federal response and then there's a New York State response. I mean, New York State, and I think for it makes a lot of sense, right? But New York State was the first to mobilize. It was the first plane, you know, through JetBlue to arrive with help, the first, you know, ships that were already on their way over immediately and sending crews over and first responders over. You know, New York State made a pledge before the federal government even mobilized. And I think that says a lot. No matter what side of the political divide you're on, the fact is that New York State has a constituency, a very, very large Puerto Rican constituency. There are more Puerto Ricans living outside in the diaspora, outside of Puerto Rico, than in Puerto Rico. And New York has always been the main recipient, although that's changed recently and now Florida rivals New York. But, you know, I think that we don't have direct voting power on the island, but we do have voters, you know, votes. And there's a lot of those in New York. And so that response has been interesting and I think is no surprise. And then, of course, you know, there's the response of the diaspora itself. What we've been hearing from Maria and Patricia has been amazing. And in Rochester, it's been amazing. And then there's also, I want to mention, the response of the rest of the Caribbean and Latin America, which has always reached out and wanted to help. And I think Puerto Rico really immediately mobilized to help after Irma on some of the islands were completely destroyed. And everybody got on their personal boats and took stuff over. And so, you know, I think we have to think of it in a lot of different levels. But then if, you know, later I could get back to why this hurricane is so different, perhaps, than previous ones.
Absolutely. I do see the phone starting to ring, so we'll try to work in a few of your phone calls as we continue our conversation this hour. And first up on the phones is Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, Steve, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hi. I heard about the Zumbathon, and I wondered where it is and the time.
Okay. This is actually Susie. Sorry about that, Susie. Great. Maria, I'll turn to you for information about the Zumbathon.
The Zumbathon is going to be held on Sunday, October 1st at Thomas P. Ryan Community Center, located at 530 Webster Avenue in Rochester, between 2 and 5 p.m. You can bring in a bag of non-perishable food, or you can bring in a check for $15. And the money will go to United for Puerto Rico, and all the non-perishable items will be going to, sent to the fire department.
State police.
The state police.
Is there a website where people can find more information? That's okay. If
there's a Facebook page. It's called Puertorriqueños Unidos en la Distancia. And if anybody wants more information, you can contact, the email is Unidos en la Distancia 585@gmail.com.
Perfect.
We might want to just spell that out for people who don't speak Spanish.
I will spell that out.
Thank you.
UNIDOSENLADISTANCIA 585@gmail.com.
Perfect. And Susie, we can link to that on our podcast page for this program as well. So it sounds like you're driving. I don't want you writing things down while you're driving. So thank you very much for that question. And up next on the phone is Steve in Webster this time. Go ahead, Steve.
Taking my call. I wanted to really thank the panelists for what they're doing for the people of Puerto Rico. I know of Puerto Rican descent, but I think we're all of Puerto Rican descent. And it's a beautiful thing. Oftentimes with government projects like this, I can specifically point to Afghanistan early in the war. There was no humanitarian supplies going into the country at all until soldiers themselves stepped up and started writing home to their churches and schools and families to send items of necessity for soldiers and for the community. And so it just really reminded me of the great humanitarian effort put forth by people, by human beings caring for each other. And, you know, whether you're related or not, whether you're, you know, it's another human context where we can appreciate one another and love one another. And I just admire the panelists so much that they're stepping forward and doing the most American thing we could possibly do, is to help one another.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
So we really appreciate phone calls like that from Steve, because that goes to show how we're working cross-culturally, and it doesn't matter what your ethnic background is. It doesn't matter where you're from. As he said, we're human beings. And so to really receive a phone call like that, again, goes and reinforces the support in this community. And it's just so important as well because, you know, one of the things that we always focus on is we make it a point to let people know we don't just serve the Latino community. We serve everybody. You know, we serve people of all ethnic backgrounds. We're inclusive, not exclusive. So we really appreciate phone calls like that where we have somebody who's, I think, not Latino, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Yep. Who's not and who's coming forward and saying, you know, it's really nice to see the effort that's taking place with everybody working together.
It is. It's really a beautiful thing to see the community coming together. And a question I have for all of you is, do you think the community will grow? And by that I mean, do you think the Latin American community will grow? I'm reading an article from the Democrat and Chronicle that Justin Murphy wrote, and part of it he says the island's governor warned of a mass exodus if emergency aid, including possibly some debt relief, is not immediately forthcoming. More than 400,000 people have already left in the last several years. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said he expects thousands more Puerto Ricans to add to the more than 700,000 already in New York City. And Rochester, of course, has a very large Puerto Rican population as well. Do you think that you might see a mass exodus from the island, Maria?
Well, I can tell you personally my opinion, what I feel. I feel like the ones that are leaving right now from Puerto Rico are the ones that face challenges that they really need to leave, like for medical conditions or small children or the elderly. I think that the majority of the people will stay. I think that the ones that are coming want to go back. I think that they will go back because that is their country. They love Puerto Rico. I personally, because of this, I know that I'm going to be going to Puerto Rico more often. I know that I want to build there also. I think it's important for us to maintain a sense of our culture, our roots, and being on that island means something very special. So the exodus that you're seeing, everyone will go back. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Isabel?
I mean, I just want to mention that Puerto Rico has been experiencing a net population loss since 2005. And that's a year before the Puerto Rican recession and a couple of years before the United States recession, right? And it's been accelerating since 2010. Around 2005, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, there's almost the same amount of Puerto Ricans living on the island versus in the diaspora in the continental U.S. And now it's like a figure of 5.4 million versus 3.4 million on the island, 5.4 million off the island. So there has already been a mass exodus. And I can tell you it's actually palpable when I visit for the first time in the last year or two. I go at least twice a year. You know, it's changed. I mean, you could feel it, you can see it. And so will people continue to leave? Absolutely. And they're leaving not just to, you know, right now because they need medical care. That's an urgent thing, and they probably will return, like Maria says. But it's for jobs, and it's because of the very severe economic recession. I went to graduate school because I wanted to come back and teach at the University of Puerto Rico. Well, I never got that job. I got an offer here in Rochester. I'm thankful for that, but that wasn't the plan. So I was part of that diaspora that's been growing. That's part of the reason why I think this hurricane is very different, because a lot of people have left recently and still have. They didn't leave with their entire families, like migrations in, say, the 1950s. Our families are literally spread out across what is now a Puerto Rico that goes into the continental U.S.
Is this a time to discuss the question of Puerto Rican statehood?
That's obviously a very politically charged topic. I don't know if the others want to comment.
I don't think so, to be honest. I mean, that's just my opinion. Right now, I think the focus really should be, okay, what can we do to help the families, the children, the parents in Puerto Rico? We do expect to see some people leave the island to come here. We already know of just a few staff members at Ibero that are looking to bring their families here. At the same time, we also have people in Puerto Rico who have said, I'm not leaving, because they are very proud of their heritage and they don't want to leave. So as far as a mass exodus right now, compared to what the numbers that Isabel was giving, you know, it's hard to say. We know we hear the stories of hundreds of people being at the airport looking to leave. But as Maria mentioned also, a lot of them will want to go back because that's what they know. That's their island. That's their patria, right. You know. So right now what we're doing is we're, you know, reaching out to the other community organizations to, you know, to prepare for it so that if we do have a large number of Puerto Ricans come here so that we can be well prepared in all areas, you know, if they're looking, let's say, just all kinds of areas, you know, housing, or, you know, just to become familiar with the community. If they're looking long term, you know, if they don't know English, teaching them English, just things like that, just to help them prepare and to make a smooth transition for not just them, but for our community as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead. Isabel.
Well, I just want, I mean, like, for example, the population of Rochester in general has actually been decreasing over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. That's a very rough number I'm throwing out there. And except for the population that has been growing, and this is true in general demographically all across the United States, but the one population that's been growing is the Latino population. And in the case of Rochester, to be Latino in the United States really means to be Mexican. You know, 65% truly are of Mexican descent. But that's not the case here. In Rochester, to be Latino means 75% or 77% or something are Puerto Rican. So regardless of what's going on, that population has been growing in Rochester. And, of course, it didn't have to do directly with the hurricane. So I think there's some general trends. And will this kind of maybe propel things a little bit quicker in the next few months or possibly? It's hard to tell. But that already was happening. That was already kind of set in motion.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last few minutes, and we've spoken about the devastation and the destruction about Hurricane Maria and how it compares to other hurricanes, especially agriculturally. But Isabel, I know you wanted to talk about other hurricanes in a broader context.
Well, I was just going to mention, I think, you know, what's happening in Puerto Rico, I see it as, especially in terms of the scholarship that's come out recently about natural disasters and how people have reminded us that these don't happen. They're not just these natural phenomena. They're natural phenomena that occur within a political and social and economic context, like Katrina, like the earthquake in Haiti. You know, that wasn't just an earthquake, and Katrina wasn't just a hurricane or flooding. The ways in which they play out and what they tell us about our world, I think, are very important and should be pointed out. I mean, like, the economic crisis in Puerto Rico is staggering. And so when a hurricane hits an economically bankrupt and devastated place that is not able, I mean, we talk about recovery efforts. And so we can get that water to the people right now that need it and are being are dehydrated. But how do you recover? And these are really big questions. And I would love to invite everybody to, yes, be part of the relief efforts, but perhaps also remember that we really needed your attention and help before the hurricane. The infrastructure was already in trouble, was already, you know, the equivalent of what would be RG&E, the electric, Puerto Rican electric company, already was bankrupt. And that's just, you know, there were already funds allocated years ago to repair sewage and water, and it wasn't done. And again, the communities that are being hit the hardest are those communities that don't have the ability. They don't have work. They don't have employment. So these are really big issues that I think should be part of the conversation much beyond the next few months, that where we really need to pay urgent attention. But I really invite people to continue paying attention and to try to do something about structural change that will be much more meaningful to recovery and to get the island back on its feet. Mm-hmm.
We have someone else on the phone. It's Irene in Rochester. Irene, I'm sorry we're too late in the hour to take any more calls, but she wanted to mention the Zumbathon again. So, Maria, if you can just repeat that information about the Zumbathon for those who are interested.
Okay, the Zumbathon will be on Sunday, October 1st at Thomas P. Ryan Community Center, 530 Webster Avenue in Rochester, between the hours of 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. It'll be a food drive. You can either bring a bag of non-perishable food, or you can bring $15.
Perfect. And for those of you who are interested in becoming more involved to try to help, there, of course, is that Zumbathon. And also, you can contact Ibero. Patricia, will you give us the number again for Ibero?
Yep, that number is area code 585-256-8900. Again, 256-8900.
And for those who are listening and they want to do something that's tangible right now, I'll just go around the table very quickly, 10 seconds each. What's the best thing they can do? Patricia?
drop donations off at the State Police Barracks on Scottsville Road, no food or clothes, or make a donation to the Red Cross and put Hurricane Maria in the memo line.
Perfect. Thank you. Isabel?
I think our local musicians are doing a couple great events in the next couple of weeks in October. I don't have the information right in front of me, but look to go listen to some great local music and donate money that way because there's fundraisers there.
Perfect. And Maria?
I think that everything that Patricia and Isabel also said, and as well as everybody should be praying. I think prayer says a lot.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining me, being so open and sharing your stories. Patricia Cruz Irving, Isabel Cordova, and Maria Delgado, thank you so much. Thank you all who have called. More Connections is next.
Thanks.